So we are back in the study of Matthew this morning. I just said that to see if you're listening. Are we in the study of Matthew? All right. Only two people actually caught that. It's Luke. And today I'm going to be talking about the number one sin for all of us. Worry. That's right. So here's a good quote. Here's a good quote. This comes from Corey Tim Boom about worry. It says, "Worry does not rob us today of its sorrows, but it robs us tomorrow of its strengths." Worry doesn't rob, or it doesn't eliminate any of today's sorrows. It diminishes tomorrow's strengths. When you worry, you're filled with fear, not strength. And Jesus knew that it was the common sin. And so he included it in the Sermon on the Mount. Here's a little funny story. Well, to me it's funny. It may not be to you, but in Charles Swindoll's book, Hand Me Another Brick, in the study of Nehemiah, he said, "A funny thing happened in Darlington, Maryland several years ago. Edith, a mother of eight, was coming home from a neighbor's house on Saturday afternoon. As she walked into the house, she saw five of her youngest children huddled together, concentrating with intense interest on something. As she slipped near them, trying to discover the center of attention, she couldn't believe her eyes. Smack dab in the middle of the circle were several baby skunks. She screamed at the top of her voice, 'Children, run!' Each kid grabbed a skunk and ran." Sometimes just when you think you have the right strategy down, you realize it's just more complicated than it was in the beginning. But worry is what we do. We worry about our next meal. We worry about what we're going to wear. We worry about our house. We worry about the weather and a thousand other things. But is there another way to deal with anxiety? Jesus says so. The anxiety that is so common to us. So let's read the passage we're looking at. It's Luke chapter 12, verse 22 through 32. "Then Jesus said to his disciples, 'Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, what you will wear. Life is more than food, and the body more than clothes. Consider the ravens. They do not sow or reap. They have no storeroom or barn, yet God feeds them. And how much more valuable you are than the birds." Let me read that again. "And how much more valuable you are than the birds. Who of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to his life? Since you cannot do this very thing, this very little thing, why do you worry about the rest? Consider how the lilies grow. They do not labor or spin, yet I tell you, not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, how much more will he clothe you, O you of little faith? And do not set your heart on what you will eat or drink. Do not worry about it, for the pagan world runs after all such things, and your Father knows that you need them. But seek his kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well. Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom." If you've ever been choked, it's a pretty frightening experience. I was choked once. I happened to be in Washington, D.C. at a big, huge dinner, and I got choked, and the guy had to do a Heimlich maneuver on me. I think he must have been a linebacker in some football team. He broke two ribs, but he actually got my throat, and I was glad to accept the broken ribs to be able to breathe. I was actually at the point of passing out. First time anything like that has happened. I think it'll probably be the last time. It was very, very scary. The word worry actually has a connotation to it of being choked, that worry chokes you. You can kind of see this. It kind of chokes the life out of us. It certainly chokes out belief. It chokes out faith. It chokes out the Word of God. because anxiety consumes us and all we can do is worry. So Jesus actually begins with command, and he tells us, don't worry. Stop worrying. Do not worry. Look at verse 22. Therefore, I tell you, do not worry. And then he elaborates. Don't worry about your life, what you're going to eat, what you're going to wear. Don't worry about your body. Because isn't life more than just food and drink and the clothes you wear? Jesus knows us inside and out, and he knows how we worry. But the marketing strategies that come across through the media today are meant to sell you products. They aren't worried about what it's going to do to you, but selling you something is meant to make you think you need it. I mean, it's not just want. You actually need what they have. You need what they have for your hair to be healthy and beautiful. You need their drink. You need their car. All you young men, girls will flock to you if you have their car. You young girls, boys will flock to you if you have their product. It is an exaggeration to make us think we need what they're selling. And unfortunately, the world is always needing something else. But Jesus commands us not to worry about life. He's trying to give us a simple view in this passage about life, because we get a distorted view of life living here. We have to reject the view that is given to us in our world that life is about what we wear, about what we eat, about our food. Jesus says it's not. So it's a question of whether we're going to believe Jesus or whether we're going to believe the world that we live in. Don't worry about food. That's where he starts. And so in order to do that, he says, consider the ravens. Now, I haven't seen too many ravens around here, but there are crows. That's their cousins. Crows and ravens are in every nation and every place in the earth, except for the Antarctic. But the crows and ravens are everywhere. They're scavenger birds. God put them here as part of the process of keeping this earth clean. They are the most common bird besides a sparrow, especially in this family of scavengers that there is. He says, consider the ravens. Now, when's the last time you saw a raven out planting a field of corn? Or see the ravens out, but I have this little video that I have always shown my grandkids about the wise little red hen, and she's out planting corn because the pig's too lazy and the duck's too lazy to go help, and she has all of them out there planting and working. Well, they don't do that, just except in Disney videos. But the duck is lazy and the pig is lazy. That's why I show them. I'm trying to get them started early about the necessity of working and understanding values in life. Jesus says they don't sow, they don't reap, they don't build any barns, and God takes care of them. Have you seen a raven or a crow out there, you know, worried to death? How are they going to make their next? They're taken care of. Something so simple as this bird. And Jesus asked us just to consider the birds. Just think about them for a little bit. Then he asked this question in verse 24 that you have to let sink in this morning. We've read it and we're going to reread it, but you have to let it sink in and actually speak to you. Consider the ravens. They do not sow or reap. They have no storerooms or barn, yet God feeds them. That's the fact. But now this is what Jesus wants you to know, and how much more valuable you are than birds. Did you realize that? That you're more valuable than birds? Now, we live in a society today that wants to tell you you're not any more valuable than birds, that birds are of equal value, and pigs and goats and cows and horses are all equal value because we're all animals. But that's not what the Bible says. All those animals were put here for our dominion. We are to have dominion over them. They are for us. And God told us to take care of the earth. But there's something distinct in the apex of God's creation of humanity. and we are more valuable than animals. Now, that lie is perpetuated because they need it to perpetuate abortion. That a human life is no more valuable than animal life, and it is one of the most powerful arguments that is still perpetuated. That's why abortion still uses it today, because it cannot use the argument that life begins at conception, because it does, and it's proven by medical science. Within just a few short days, that baby is a living life, and biology proves that. The technology, the wonder of modern technology, and it cannot be argued. You might as well go argue with a tree. That is a fact. But they can argue the fact that, is this human life any more valuable than the frog or a bird? No, it's not. And that's being argued by college professors, in fact, heads of college professors, the man who is over ethics and at Princeton University. This is his main argument, that human life is no more valuable than animal life. But the Bible makes it very clear, you are more valuable than the birds. Is that important? You better believe it's important. I would like for you to hear a conversation that I heard a couple sparrows say this week. These were talking sparrows, all right? One of them says to the other one, I should really like to know why those anxious human beings rush about and worry so, said the sparrow to the robin. Friend, I think it must be they have no heavenly father such as cares for you and me. We do have a heavenly father, and knowing our heavenly father changes how we look at life, and changes, if it changes how we look at life, it changes how much we worry. Because the secret to overcoming worry is to understand who you are in regard to your heavenly father, your creator. He created you and he will take care of you. Jesus actually says that worrying is actually an exercise in futility. It's total futility. It's absurd to worry. So here's his argument, and he asks a rhetorical question. A rhetorical question means the answer's in the question. Nobody answers a rhetorical question because the answer's already right there. So here's the rhetorical question. Who of you by worrying can add a single hour to his life? Can anybody do that? Rich people would have paid millions to be able to do that. But nobody can do that, and we all know that no one can add even a minute to your life. Now, you might add some time by taking care of your body, but at the end of your life, can you seriously add time to your life? The answer is no. And Jesus says in verse 26, since you cannot do this very little thing, for God it's a little thing, for us it's an impossible thing, why do you worry about the rest? Kierkegaard, he was a philosopher from Denmark, who wrote some interesting things over the years, and this is what he says about anxiety. He says that anxiety is such a terrible, there is no more terrible torture than anxiety. Worriers feel every blow that never falls, and they cry over things they will never lose, because most of what we worry about doesn't actually happen. Worry only shortens our lives, it diminishes the quality of life, and it reduces us to a very miserable existence. The second part of Jesus' illustration is to get us to look at the clothes, because that's a big worry too. So he says, consider how the lilies grow. They do not labor or spin, yet I tell you, not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, how much more will he clothe you, O you of little faith? Most scholars think that the lily is referring to all of the wildflowers that grow on their own here. And Israel, the land of Palestine, has a lot of them, the poppies and so many different ones that actually grow. And they have a very beautiful, beautiful signature of the Creator. Here's what a writer says. Most see lilies here as referring to the various bright flowers that dot the Palestinian fields in the spring. The scarlet antimony, the Easter daisy, the autumn crocus, the poppies. A bee's eye view of any of these reveals ravishing beauty, and the tiniest flowers are often the most ornate in their textures and colors. Can you see Jesus picking one of the poppies, holding it up, smelling of its fragrance? So I always kidded, you know, like to kid around with my kids and my grandkids. So when Ryan was just real little, he got this birthday card, and it had the flower, had a little boy, had a flower, and had a dog. And so I opened it up, and I said, "Can you smell the flower?" And he said, "No, I can't smell the flower for the dog." So they learned how to come back at me really early. But when you are a worrier, you don't smell the flowers or the dogs. Jesus did. I could see him stopping with the disciples. One time I was teaching at the Bible school, and I was teaching on illustrations, how to illustrate a truth. Because in preaching, you never want to find your illustrations first. You want to find what it is you're talking about and then figure out how to illustrate it. To do the reverse would be to let the illustrations drive the message. The message drives the illustrations. So you prepare the message, and this is the truth. And if an illustration comes, great. If it doesn't, forget it. The truth is what you are preaching. So I had gone over this. This was a preaching class, and so we went out, and I was going to teach them about doing spontaneous illustrations. Once you have the message in your heart and you carry it around for a few days, you'll actually, illustrations will come to you. So we went out, you know those little, what do you call those little flowers? You blow them, they go to a dandelion. So we went out, and so I said, everybody grab a dandelion. So then I started going around and letting them illustrate what did the dandelion, you know, picking the dandelion, blowing it and watching it, what illustrations? Well, they came up with like 10 different illustrations. They were just kind of like going off the wall with different illustrations and everything. The whole point of life is when you're worrying, you don't see God's creation. You certainly don't experience it. You're rushing through life, burdened, down, heavy. And this fear has hopped on your back. And you're huffing and puffing trying to make it to the next spot, which is the next day. And when you lay down and you rest and you get up, he's right there to hop on your back again the next day, and then you take off. But when you turn worry loose, you're actually free to pick up the dandelion, blow it, and enjoy the day ahead of you, whatever it is in front of you, because God didn't make us to worry. So just think about those flowers, the wildflowers. We all love any kind of flowers, but in the living Los Angeles, which is desert, really, nothing grows there. It's not like Missouri where we have all this rain and you have everything is green. It's dry, so it's desert. But in the springtime, they do get a little bit of rain, like, you know, 2 inches. Everybody jumps up and down when they're raining. When I had my little granddaughter, Caitlin, here the last time she was here, and it started raining. And so I turned on the windshield wipers, and she says, "Mommy, what is that on the window? It's going like this." I said, "Karen, that's ridiculous. Your kid doesn't even know what windshield wipers are." So when you leave Los Angeles driving to where I was raised in San Joaquin Valley, you have to cross pretty good mountain range. It's 5,000, 6,000, almost 6,000 feet. And it's called a grapevine. And in the spring, and most of the time, it's just pretty boring dry because the mountains don't have anything on them, no trees, they're just brown. And as soon as you get to June, everything is just dirt brown all the way through. But there's about a month in April where some rain comes and these poppies just come out all over the mountains of the grapevine. It's one of the most beautiful sights. You have lots of different colors, and these are wild flowers. And Jesus is saying, just stop and look at those poppies and see how they're dressed. Solomon, with all his gold and all his tailors and all his, I mean, he was something. He couldn't even compare to how these flowers are dressed, because God dressed them in the finest. And they were just made for a moment. As soon as that fierce sun comes out, they'll all be gone. And yet God made them so beautiful. Look at Isaiah 47. The grass withers and the flowers fall because the breath of the Lord blows on them. Surely the people are grass. There's a truth in there, that life is short. It's brief. We'll talk about that more in a moment. Verse 28, if that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, how much more? Here we are again with the same valuable statement. How much more will he clothe you, O you of little faith? If God takes care of those flowers like that, he's going to take care of you in exactly the same way. The flowers are our teachers. Don't worry about your clothes. Don't worry about your house. Don't worry about the things. So we got a do. Here we get a do and a don't in verse 29. And do not, here's a don't, do not set your heart on what you will eat or drink. Don't worry about it, for the pagan world runs after all such things, and your Father knows that you need them. Now here's a do, but seek his kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well. So don't worry, don't run after them. Don't make that the central thing of your life. Seek God's kingdom. We really have a thing about crossing rivers that we never actually get to. When Lincoln was on his way to Washington to be inaugurated, he spent some time in New York with Horace Greeley and told him an anecdote that was meant to be an answer to the question everybody was asking him, are you really going to have a civil war? In his circuit riding days, Lincoln and his companions, riding to the next session of court, had crossed many swollen rivers, one particular journey. But the formidable Fox River was still ahead of them. They said one to another, if these streams give us so much trouble, how shall we get over the Fox River? When darkness fell, they stopped for the night at a log tavern, where they fell in with the Methodist presiding elder of the district, who rode through the country in all kinds of weather and knew all about the Fox River. They gathered around him and asked him about the present state of the river. Oh, yes, replied the circuit rider. I know all about the Fox River. I have crossed it often and understood it well. But I have one fixed rule with regard to the Fox River. I never cross it till I reach it. That's a pretty good rule. When I was at the Bible school, so in my first few months there, I was almost consumed with the financial debt. That every day somebody was talking to me about people we owed and people were there to collect money, and it was just every single day. So it took me a few months, but then I made this rule that I wouldn't talk about money except on Fridays, Friday morning only. So if bill collectors came or other people came, they would just simply say, you have to come back next Friday. I did that to survive because it was taking over my life. I was crossing bridges before I got there. When I got to the bridge, when I got to the river, then I would worry about crossing it. That's what Jesus is asking us to do here in Matthew. It says, therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. George MacDonald says, no man ever sank under the burden of the day. It is when tomorrow's burden is added to the burden of today that the weight is more than we can bear. But that's what we're not supposed to do. What we are supposed to do is that we are to seek his kingdom. And then the things that we need, not want necessarily, the things that we need will be added to us. Jesus is talking about need right here, not luxury. Jesus isn't saying the latest model chariot will be given to you here, huh? This is prosperity gospel has taken verse 31 to the hilt and said you could have the house, the boat, the Mercedes, whatever you want. That's not what it's saying. The whole context of everything Jesus is talking to is about need. We have to eat. We have to have a house or a place to live. We have to have clothes to wear. These are needs. But Jesus is not talking about luxuries. He's not talking about over-opulent living. Some people will experience wealth, and God may bless them with enormous wealth, especially if they know how to use that wealth to minister to other people. But this isn't a promise of wealth here. This is a promise that God will meet our needs. And if we can trust Him, then He will take away the worry, because worry is what is diminishing our contentment and happiness in life. One of the ways that you do that is understanding that God has all your needs already met. Look at verse 32. Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Do you remember the elder brother and the story of the prodigal? He got mad because the father was throwing a fiesta for the younger brother. He didn't think he deserved it. And so when he came and all the music was going on and celebrating, and he was invited to go in, he said, I'm not going in there. I'm not celebrating. I'm not doing it. He said, you took Bruno the calf and you killed him for my idiot brother here that spent all of his money on prostitutes, and you've never given me one of those. You haven't even butchered a goat for me, let alone something as big as Bruno. That's just a paraphrase edition. Fattened calf. And you know what the father said to him? He said, son, everything I have is yours. If you'd have come to me and said, Dad, I would like to have some of my friends over, like to butcher a calf, do you think I would ever say no? If you came and said, Dad, I'd like to use the chariot today, do you think I would ever said no? Everything I have is yours. But the older son, he didn't know it. He had never experienced it. He lived with a poverty mentality, a scarcity mentality. So Jesus says, what will help you to overcome worry is to learn to develop a generous spirit. Because worry is actually the opposite. It is a selfish spirit. It is a tightwad spirit. Here's the Spanish word, because it keeps popping in my head, mezquino spirit. That's how you say selfish in Spanish. And you hit your elbow like this when you do it. You say mezquino. That means you are really selfish. Jesus says in verse 33, sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will not be exhausted, where no thief comes near, no moth destroys, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Learning how to give. Here's a paragraph from C.S. Lewis from an essay he wrote, Meditations in the Tool Shed. This is an old tool shed that had dirt and dust. It's just a simple paragraph that he wrote about what he experienced while he was in this tool shed. I was standing today in the dark tool shed. The sun was shining outside, and through the crack at the top of the door, there came a sunbeam. From where I stood, that beam of light with the specks of dust floating in it was the most striking thing in the place. You ever done that? You ever been out and see a beam come through and see the dust floating in it? Everything else was almost pitch black. I was seeing the beam, not seeing things by it. Then I moved so that the beam fell on my eyes. Instantly, the whole previous picture vanished. I saw no tool shed, and above all, no beam. Instead, I saw, framed in the irregular cranny at the top of the door, green leaves moving on the branches of a tree outside, and beyond that, 90-odd million miles away, the sun, looking along the beam and looking along the beam and looking at the beam are very different experiences. Just looking at the beam coming through is one thing, and then looking up and seeing the sun is an entirely different thing. We actually have the opportunity in this life to look up to God and see Him. He wants to have that kind of relationship with us. But our eyes will be constantly on the things we're worried about: food, drink, clothes, house. Unless we turn loose of these things and give, we won't be free to see God and experience God. In the bulletin, I put a book in there that's available on Amazon by Ralph Hyatt, and it has some of the most exciting stories in there. One quick story I'll share with you. I was trying to see if there's anybody in here that went with us to our last trip to Argentina. Not the last one, the one before that when we went to Buenos Aires. And I took the guys on Sunday night to a church service. I know Dennis was in that service, but he's downstairs. But anyway, on a Sunday night, I took them to a large church in Buenos Aires that has about 8 or 10,000 people. It was a Saturday night. And so we attended the service. And on Saturday night, they gave an altar call, and they had about 80 people come up to receive Jesus. It was a very thrilling service. But in the book, he tells the starting of that church, because there's scores of churches that he helped start. And that particular church was started with a young man that I knew, the young man. And they had a little group of people, and they got the place where they wanted to buy a building. And Ralph needed an extra $25,000. He had $25,000 and he needed to borrow. So he called Springfield Missions Department and asked if they would loan him $25,000. And he got an emphatic no. They were in an accounting process and they weren't giving any loans for several weeks. And they said, no, not now. And he was a little bit discouraged. But the next day, there's a church in Indianapolis called Lakeview Temple. And at that time, it was pastored by a man named Thomas Pano. And he had at that time a man in the church by name of Roy Brock, who I actually knew and stayed in his home several times, and I knew Thomas Pano. And this Roy Brock was a multi-millionaire. So he came in. This was the beginning of his missionary giving, because he started giving to missions all over the world. And he wound up connecting with me and helping me in several different projects, Roy Prock, and I wound up staying in his home in Indianapolis. So he went into Thomas Pano and he said, I got $25,000 I want to give to a church in South America. So Pano picks up the phone, he calls the missions department and says he wants to speak to the executive director. His name's Hogan. And they said, well, he's busy, unless it's an emergency. And he said, well, if $25,000 is an emergency, I've got it to give to a church in South America. So Hogan says, yeah, that's an emergency. So he took the call and he said, well, actually, it's interesting. There was a missionary from Argentina that called yesterday, wanted to borrow $25,000, and you want to give $25,000. So they called Ralph the very next day and told him, we will not give you the loan, as we said. We're going to give you the money. So that was the beginning of that church. That church now has at least 10,000 people. It's packed every night. There's a story in there about another church that started the same time. It has over 30 or 40,000, and that pastor is in there in the same way. That church started the same way. But they're all stories of somebody giving something. So this guy, Roy Prock, that was very wealthy, he lived in Indianapolis, and I had the opportunity to, he invited me to come to his home on several occasions. And I met him in Florida at another home. So this home he had in Indianapolis, that was, you know, multi-million-dollar home. So he said, do you want to go out and help me feed the deer? I said, yeah, I love deer. So we got in a boat, and he had a private island out. We got in a motorboat, and we went out, and then he had deer on this island out there. So we fed the deer. We come back. I mean, this house was like a Hearst castle. It was nice. And his offices, three-story office buildings, and probably hundreds of employees, and construction business, all kinds of business. The church, Lakeview Temple, they were having a missions convention, and they the hotel was always several miles away, and he said, well, why don't we get a hotel close? So he just had them build a hotel the next year. He said, there's a piece of property over there, see if we can get it. They bought it, and the next year he had built a hotel for them to have their missions convention. One thing about that man, though, that was, and I was with him on at least three or four different occasions in their home and different places, was the desire to give. I think one of the reasons why he had so much to give is because he gave. A lot of people, when they get, they keep. It's kind of like the Dead Sea in Israel. It has an entrance. The Jordan River flows into it, but it has no exit, and it's a Dead Sea. It stinks. But the Sea of Galilee, the same Jordan River flows in it, and it has an exit, and it's beautiful blue water with fish. But some Christians are like that. They have money that comes into their life, but it doesn't flow out. Roy Brock had an outlet. The more he got, the more he gave. There was another missionary in Argentina. Her name was Pansy Blossom. I kid you not, that was her actual name. She was actually from Illinois. So the last name was Blossom. She never married. Her mom thought it would be nice to name her Pansy. So she went to China. She spent many years as missionary in China. Then she went to Peru, spent years, and then wound up in Argentina and spent over 50 years in Argentina. And then we knew her. She was there. And she loved to teach the Bible school. She loved to help young pastors, and she would use so much of her money to help these little small churches and struggling pastors to build churches. The last few years of her life, she was in Springfield at Maranatha. And the day of her funeral was a cold winter day. There was only 10 people that were present when Pansy was buried in Springfield in, I think it was 2003. Yeah, July of 2003. So not too famous, not here anyway, but I will tell you, in heaven, Pansy is probably one of the wealthiest people who ever made it to heaven. The investment that she has sent up there over all the decades, all the people, and Pansy's giving was, you would never know it. You would always find out about it by accident. You would find out, this pastor, well, she gave me $10,000. She gave me $1,000. She gave me this. Nobody would ever know. She would give the last dime she had. One time, Marilyn and I were with her, and this taxi driver cheated her out of quite a bit of money. It just made me really upset. The Argentines have a word for that. They say bronca. It gives you bronca. And so I said, Pansy, that's terrible. That guy cheated you, because they have all these tricks. So he took her money. And he uses a false bill, and he holds up a false, this is false. You just gave me a false bill. So he says, I'm going to report you to the police, or they just wind up cheating. So he cheated her out about $100. And I said to her, I said, Pansy, doesn't it bother you that guy took your money and cheated you like that? He's so crooked. She said, well, maybe he needs it more than I do. Because I have never, ever had a need that God didn't meet. And I certainly don't want to be worrying about that $100. I admire people who have the ability to trust God and not worry. Look at verse 34. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Here's some advice for investing in heaven and putting money where, if your heart's in heaven. Remember, number one, that you're God's steward, and everything that comes to you is God's. You're just managing it. Number two, giving starts with a grateful heart. It reflects how you feel about what God has done for you. Third, start small. Never wait till you have a lot. It's not about amounts. It's about consistency. So you tithe and you give on what you have, not on what you want to have. Fourth, you plan to give. You plan each week. You plan each month. You plan each year. You plan to give to God. It's part of the goals of your life. Fifth, you trust God to meet your needs and to bless your work. Six, you set priorities with your money. And God blesses you and helps you reach those. And seventh, you reflect on what is eternal, not just temporal.